Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. I'm joined right now by two folks from the Great Lakes Research Center in Michigan Tech. Right now in studio is Dr. Latika Gupta. She is the Assistant Professor of Economics. She's an energy economist. And also Dr. Nancy Langston, who is Professor of Environmental History and from the Department of Social Sciences and the School of Forestry at Michigan Tech. Ladies, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here, Rick.
Now, this is a special segment of Copper Country Today. We're going to be looking at the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I reached out to the smartest people I know in the area, which are people who teach at Michigan Tech, to come in and try to give a factual explanation of what is happening, you know, surrounding this pipeline, both its history leading up to the point that we're at right now, what's going on at the protest site, and looking ahead into the future. Now, doing some personal research, this is kind of where I got into this quagmire, looking on social media sites and trying to get an understanding of what's going on. But really what I got is a deluge of personal opinions and very biased stories. And even trying to seek out some more reputable sites online to try to give me a kind of a voice of reason explanation to what is happening. It'd be followed by the comment section online with a lot of people saying that the article had a lot of mistruths in it. So it's kind of right back to where I started from. I believe that if I felt that way, there were a lot of people, especially in our area, who don't have direct access to information coming from the protest area or from the company building the pipeline, that, well, we might feel in the same way. So it was a good opportunity to bring in some people that may have a little bit more knowledge about it than I do and talk about it. So Dr. Gupta, Latika, let's go ahead and start with you. And can you give us a little bit of a background in the pipeline itself and how it started?
Sure. So this pipeline is being constructed by a private company called Energy Transfer Partners. It's nearly 1,200 miles long, or it's supposed to be nearly 1,200 miles long. It's supposed to run from North Dakota to Illinois, so it crosses four states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois. And it's supposed to take oil, about 550,000 barrels per day. And the oil is then supposed to be shipped to refineries through rail transportation and existing pipelines in Illinois. And the controversy arises because there are about 22 water bodies in the pipeline area that require deep water drilling, which if a spill occurs, will cause a lot of environmental damage. The Sioux tribe area itself was initially rejected because of an existing landfill near the area. So in addition to the existing controversy, that was an initial controversial claim. There are other areas, for example, in Iowa, there are landholders, there are parcel holders who have sued because using eminent domain, the pipeline is being built to carry the oil. But this is a classic case of an externality. So in economics, we have a concept called externality, where a third party is being affected due to a market transaction. Here, the third party being the society as a whole, or in this case, in particular, it's the Sioux tribe. So where the private party, the Energy Transfer Partners, is not actually taking into account the cost that it's imposing on the society as a whole and the tribe. And in this case, what we have as a result is a classic case of what we call in economics a market failure, which is why we need the government to interfere. And there is a need for the government to interfere because we have too many parties involved, and it's hard for a private solution to arise.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Thanks very much, Latika. That's a wonderful overview of the issue. I work with tribes across the country on sovereignty rights, and The right for the tribes to be consulted has emerged as one of the key components of the disputes here. So in December 2014, Dakota Access Pipeline, owned by Energy Transfer Partners, applied to build the pipeline running across four states and across water bodies, and that means they have to get permission from each of the four states and also from the federal government, from the Army Corps. And at each of those stages, since 1992, the federal government has required that federally recognized tribes be part of the consultation process from the very beginning of projects. So in early 2014, the Standing Rock Sioux told Energy Transfer Partners in a meeting that was recorded that they would oppose the pipeline in the route that it's now currently planned for that runs half a mile just north of the reservation boundary, because those reservation boundaries are under dispute. In the 1851 treaty with the Sioux, the Fort Laramie Treaty, that was part of the reservation boundary. Two later treaties were not actually signed by the tribe, and so their legal status is contested. The Supreme Court ruled in 1980 that the lands were taken illegally from the tribe, and it's still working its way really through some of the courts. So in 2014, the Standing Rock Sioux said that they would not approve that particular pipeline route. Then the state of North Dakota held three public hearings, and it's not really clear how well they consulted with the tribe, as they're required by federal law to do. The state issued a permit in 2016, January 2016, and at that point the Army Corps steps in. In April 2016, the Army Corps held a hearing with the Standing Rock Sioux, which the state had neglected to do. The Standing Rock Sioux issued its notice that it opposed the route because it went over sacred and historic artifacts, particularly burial grounds. A couple months later, though, July, the Army Corps decided to approve three easements for the three major water crossings. And at that point, I think just about a week later, the Standing Rock Sioux sued, the Army Corps in federal court, in the U.S. District Court, citing violations of a whole series of federal statutes. So those court cases have been working their way through. And those are the court cases that the Army Assistant Secretary, just December 4th, exactly a week and one day ago, issued a finding, a memorandum, that said the easement could not go through until there was a full environmental impact statement and the alternate routes were carefully looked at. So part of why the tribe has been so frustrated, and this has actually become the largest gathering of Native North American tribes probably in the last three centuries, is because of the challenges to sovereignty rights and to full consultation, but also because of an environmental justice claim, and that is that Dakota Access Pipeline, originally as one of its possible sites, was going to run the pipeline just north of Bismarck, North Dakota. And the pipeline company and Army Corps decided that might potentially pose too much risk to the water supply of Bismarck, which is largely an Anglo-American community. And so the company decided to route it half a mile north of the reservation over the sole water source for the tribe. And so the tribe feels that in addition to the violation of the consultation requirements that are part of federal law, that their potential water quality has been sacrificed to protect the water quality of the town, Bismarck.
One point that you had brought up just a moment ago touched on something that I think I was starting to get a clearer picture when I was doing my own personal research, and that was the claims that the Standing Rock tribe had been consulted, and that numerous tribes, it said hundreds of tribes, had been consulted, and that they never got any cooperation with the Standing Rock Sioux. And then I'm reading that, yes, they got an answer. It was no. And company didn't like the answer and you continued with the process anyways, hoping to get a different answer, which it made me always kind of wonder, well, why, you know, they always hear the pipeline's almost finished and now this protest is happening. It's been a process of 2 years. Why did the protesters wait so long to begin to argue? Well, it's because they had given their answer and the answer had been no. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you're correct. There are different levels of consultation. So the company met with the Standing Rock Sioux without the federal government representatives there. And at that point in 2014, the Standing Rock Sioux were very, very clear that they would not approve this pipeline because of threats to sacred resources and burial grounds and religious practices. Then the state, they held three public meetings. They issued one notice and one press release. It seems like they did not contact the tribe directly. The closest hearing was over an hour from the reservation and did not mention any issues related to tribal consultation. So the state is saying the tribe didn't show up at our hearings. The tribe is saying we weren't issued the kind of invitation that's required. And I don't know what the right answer to that is. Then the Army Corps, which is the federal agency that is really required to undergo a very strict consultation process, and you can follow through all the legal documents, which have been filed in our public records. The Tribal Historic Preservation Officer filed a number, probably about 30, specific issues and concerns about the path of the pipeline, asked for full environmental impact statements. And the Army Corps, it appears, were also filing their particular papers, but there was not much of a meeting. And so, in essence, the survey was on a fast track for the permit. It happened very, very quickly. The tribe was very concerned that its archaeologists, that tribally certified archaeologists, so they don't have to be from that specific tribe, but archaeologists certified by the tribes to recognize cultural resources, were never included in the process, and their tribal historic preservation officer, her repeated letters were never answered. But in essence, what it looks like right now is that the company and the Army Corps relied on a 1985 survey rather than actually going and doing a survey on the ground. So when the tribal archaeologists finally were allowed to go out, they were actually forbidden from accessing much of the pipeline route because it was private property. When the rancher finally allowed them to look and see some of the sites on September 2nd, and they identified sites of really international importance, a particular Big Dipper stone formation that is of international significance, they filed that with federal court asking for an injunction against bulldozing proceeding until archaeologists had been allowed to examine that resource. And then the very next day, the company went in and bulldozed that site. And so those kind of activities have led to a dramatic amount of distrust among the different parties. The Army Corps, I believe, has done its best to follow the letter of the law. And when the Army Assistant Secretary last week, Joe Ellen Darcy, ruled that process needed to be much more inclusive, much fuller consultation was required, she was very careful to state that the Army Corps had followed the letter of the law, but that she believed a much fuller environmental impact statement that included alternatives and included a full archaeological set of investigations was necessary.
Dr. Gupta, one of the points of the protesters is that it will endanger the water supply for the reservation. And again, trying to sort through information, the pipeline is going to be going upstream, I guess, from the water intake for the reservation. But that aren't plans in place to change where the water source would be, and just a matter of, I think it's months. Would that be? That's what I'm understanding. You're shaking your head over here.
Right. One point that I can't directly comment on that, but one point that I'd like to make here is that, there are costs to government regulation and there are costs to environmental regulation, but there is a myth out there that environmental regulation imposes huge costs. And in fact, research has shown that since the EPA was formed in 1970, it has actually cost less money to enforce all of those regulations than what the industry had predicted, and than what the EPA had predicted themselves. And so the cost to divert this pipeline, to come up with an alternate route, to come up with maybe some of the cleanup costs would actually not be a lot. And so, some of the possible solutions for this would be to maybe have some type of an environmental regulation in place. Another solution would be to have an alternate route, which seems to me the most popular one. A third solution would be to compensate the affected parties, which is very difficult to assess, because how do you assess the social injustice that is being carried out, or how do you come up with a number for the health costs on society as a whole? The third solution is to have no production at all, and that's when you come up with and that's when you ask the question about, is there actually an economic benefit to doing this? And that's when, you know, there are pros and cons to doing this. I mean, yes, there is an economic benefit, because the pipeline itself would lead to creation of jobs. It would lead to economic growth for the local areas, the fossil fuels producing local areas, the energy producing areas. And of course, you know, we are looking at landlocked areas like North Dakota. So there is a question of rail transportation, where which of course is more expensive, and there are accidents through rail transportation as well. But at the same time, we are living in an era where we already have a glut of oil in the global markets. So do we really need to be building a pipeline and encouraging more oil production at the same time? So is there really an economic benefit to even building the pipeline itself? So that's another question that we should really be asking.
Nancy, you wanted to touch on that?
Sure. Thank you very much. Energy Transfer, the company that owns the pipeline, does, of course, have real economic concerns. They've invested almost $3.7 billion of bank money, such as the large Norwegian bank that pulled out, into this project on the grounds that, quite correctly, that rail transportation is currently much more expensive than pipeline transportation of crude oil, anywhere from $4 to $10 per barrel. And they argue that that's part of the reason that the Bakken play has really kind of petered out in recent years, because there are pipelines that serve the Bakken crude oil fields, but some of that has to go by rail. But production has dropped for lots of reasons. Global prices have dropped, and so the Bakken play is not really competitive, even if there were pipelines there, or even if there was additional pipeline capacity. Energy Transfer also notes quite correctly that the pipeline is 96% complete, and so it doesn't want to move the route. But it's also important to recognize, in July, when the first court cases were filed, the pipeline was only a third complete, and it's been fast-tracked. In September 9th, when the Army and the Department of Interior and the Justice Department all issued a joint statement saying that access would have to be access under Lake Oahe, the Army Corps property, would have to be much more carefully addressed. At that point, the federal agencies asked the pipeline company to stop construction until these issues could work their way through the courts. And at that point, the pipeline was only a little bit more than a third complete, and the company decided not to follow the requests. And so it's true, it's much closer to completion, but that's because of a conscious decision. They have a series of contracts that were signed in 2014 when prices were much higher. And if those contracts aren't fulfilled by December 31st, I believe, then they will lose money, because the contracts will have to be renegotiated at the current price of oil, which is much lower. So there are financial pressures. There's no doubt about that. But the larger question of financial pressures on one company don't mean that we can ignore Supreme Court decisions or federal law requiring that the tribes be consulted fully and fairly.